You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, February 8th, and the trade deadline aftermath. We're going to look at the two sides of looking at the results from the deals. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and the Associated Press, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life just like y'all, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for the listen. I appreciate you guys spreading the word. A huge week on the Locked On Pistons podcast, some of our biggest episodes ever. Appreciate all that you do. But today we're going to look ahead to tonight's game against the New York Knicks. Remember them? Pistons got to be focused here. The new look Pistons with three games until the All-Star break. We're going to talk about the upside of the trades as well. The reasons I like the two trades and the non-trade that the Pistons did not make on Thursday for the deadline. But I'm also going to give you a little bit of the bad side. Something to think about that might be perceived as a negative of the deal. Something I kind of alluded to yesterday. The soul of the Pistons, which is probably something that I, or definitely something that I spend too much time thinking about, but maybe I want to get some of your thoughts on that. This is, by the way, give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. But the news from Thursday, other than the trade deadline, of course, is that Blake was drafted by Team Giannis, by the way, taken on LeBron's super team on next Sunday in Charlotte for the All-Star game. Yeah, I didn't watch it. I kind of just slept through it, actually. I was dozing off on the couch there. But I believe that Blake was on Giannis's eighth pick as I looked on the list there. I think the list I was looking at was them in order. So anyway, I mean, whatever. So it looks like LeBron's got a stacked team, and they're all free agents, so everyone's making jokes about that. But it's the All-Star game. Should be fun. We'll see if it's a competitive one again or not. But more importantly, for our purposes here on Locked On Pistons, the Stones have three games left before the All-Star break, kicking off tonight at home against the New York Knicks, then Monday against the newly somewhat depleted Washington Wizards, and then Wednesday in Boston to close out the pre-All-Star game stretch of games. Worth noting that Boston will be playing the second of a back-to-back on that night on Wednesday. So a little bit more winnable of a game than usual there. You would hope that the Pistons would get two out of three, possibly even all three of them. I'm being too optimistic when I say that. Let's shoot for two out of three. But then the the Washington Wizards game being the most important as a game, again, a red letter game, a game against a team that's still in playoff contention technically with you and could be the tiebreaker with them, as it's the third game and the Pistons and Wizards have a split. So if they get the same record and are the two teams in a tiebreaker, whether that's for seeding or to get that eighth seed to be in the playoffs or not, that Monday game will mean whether you get the playoffs or not. It could be that big of a game on Monday. I called it the other day the new biggest game of the season. I don't know if that's necessarily the same case. I think a Miami game maybe later in the season could be more important than this, given that the Wizards kind of threw up the white flag with the Otto Porter trade. But more pressing now, we'll talk about that game in Monday's show, but the Knicks tonight, you know the Knicks, not that much different from Tuesday night. Their biggest move after the deadline was buying out Wesley Matthews. So yeah, they are even worse now. Enes Kanter is also gone too, but he wasn't playing lately anyways. For the Pistons, Ish Smith should be back. He's listed as probable. That was the second half of a back-to-back on Tuesday. So sat him out with a little bit of load management there. Don't I know it, right? Guys, you're right. Load management? I don't know. So many jokes you could make on load management. Some of them are actually pretty good. But we'll continue doing some of the load management jokes on Twitter. Not old yet, but I'm sure it will get pretty old pretty soon. But looked at the injury report tonight for Friday's game. I'm taping this late on Thursday. Emmanuel Mudiay and Frank Ntilikina already listed as out once again. So, again, the Knicks, a demonstrably worse team that they put out there on Tuesday. But that's the Pistons, too. The Pistons are a worse team for sure than they were a few days ago. But the Pistons are at home. And Vegas recognizes that as the Pistons are 8.5-point favorites, which is a big number there. But we could talk about the Knicks all we want, and we won't anymore. But obviously the most important part of this game for Detroit is how the new-look Pistons look and how this thing's going to mesh. I mean, there's a lot of questions out there. You got Reggie Bullock and Stanley Johnson gone, and that is obviously a big thing. Those are two guys that ate a lot of minutes for the Pistons on the wing, and they weren't really good, or they weren't good at all on the wing as a team already, and now you take your best one out, and then, I don't know, if Stanley's the third or the fourth best wing on this team. Depends on the night, like most of these guys, but you're adding Thonmaker, obviously, to the front court. And then you got Svi Mykhailiuk also going as shooting guard. It's still taking me a little bit of time to correctly pronunciate Svi Mykhailiuk. But a couple of guys who aren't used to playing big roles, but we would expect to get some chances here with the Pistons going forward. Plus, you know, we're not sure if they'll be active in tonight's game or not. I don't have any information on that Thursday night. I'm guessing Svi will be because he was in town on Thursday, but the Thonmaker trade was not finished until Thursday, not made official until then. So, and I didn't bother looking up where the Bucks are right now, so not really sure exactly what's going on with Thon and his travel plans, or maybe if they're going to want to sit him out over the weekend and see what's up with him. But Ed Stefanski, by the way, is meeting with the media on Friday morning. I will not be there at the practice facility, but watch for some information from the beat guys mid-morning about 10:30 or so. Not sure if I'm supposed to pass that along, but maybe an embargoed thing just for media. But anyway, you didn't hear it from me. We do know that with the Pistons, there will be nights, many nights, where the three-point shooting struggles will continue and possibly even get worse. You just made the worst three-point shooting team in the league even worse. And mea culpa for me saying that this will even out after some bad shooting early on in the season. It just stayed bad. That was something I've gotten wrong. As if you listen to this show, you'd know I've gotten many things wrong, as we all do, talking about basketball and trying to be somewhat opinionated about it. But hopefully the idea that there needs to be better shooting from what's left over and the new guys, hopefully this doesn't get into Blake Griffin's head and nudge him to shoot even more. I think that he's been shooting them at a little bit of an alarming rate lately, a little bit too much, but would like to see him, you know, especially on nights where he doesn't get in it, at, you know, 12, 13, three-point attempts is too much for him. And hopefully that's something that evens out a little bit. But guys like Langston Langston Galloway, who I've said this before, just an outstanding name, especially knowing that he's from Louisiana. He just sounds like an old jazz artist. I love the name Langston Galloway. But anyway, Luke Kennard as well. We know that these guys are going to get bigger roles, and they can't play poorly more nights than they will play well anymore. We're not going to wave a magic wand and make these guys play well every night. We know that. But it's got to be better. They need to play good games more often than they have been playing good games lately, and especially Luke Kennard and both of them, really. I don't want to single out one of them. I think Langston Galloway has been objectively bad since the first maybe 6 weeks of the season when the team was playing well and when Langston was playing well. It hasn't been that way, save for a game here and there. I'm thinking of the Denver game. He played pretty well. But for the most part, it's been a bad season for Langston after a bad season last year for him. And we know we don't expect the world, the moon, and the stars from Langston Galloway, but he's getting $7 million a year. He's getting to be in an increased role coming up. Needs some more from the noted jazz musician Langston Galloway. Quite a scat artist, that guy there. But we know what we're going to get with some of these guys. I think you're going to start Luke Kennard, in my opinion, one way or the other. And I think you could start him with Bruce Brown. So I think it's pretty easy plug and play there. More for a vote of confidence and kind of a symbolic gesture of moving Luke into the starting lineup and saying, hey, you are a real core member of this team now. You are no longer a young guy who we hope to develop. You are a guy that we need to play well night in and night out. And if the shot's not going well, you need to find ways to be contributing night in and night out, like Reggie Bullock did. It's something that Luke Kennard has to grow into and has to grow into a major way right away. I think that if there's one guy on this team that's going to be the difference whether this team makes the playoffs or not, I think Luke Kennard is pretty obviously that guy. And that's just my opinion. But the combination of what they do on the wings are going to be interesting because Bullock got the most minutes before, and he's kind of a Swiss Army knife guy, and that you can match him up with anyone size-wise, skill-wise, in terms of the other wing that you have out there. But now you've got a little bit more matchup constraints to think about if you're Dwayne Casey and the coaching staff. I don't think you want to play Bruce Brown unless one of the shooters is out there for offensive spacing purposes. That's kind of been their MO, although we did see some Stanley Johnson-Bruce Brown combinations sometimes. I think speaking, you know, of those non-shooters, I'd put Glenn Robinson III in that category for now, and I assume we'll see some more of him now going forward. He's got to live up to that free agency money that he cashed in on. So, like I said, probably not a little Bruce Brown and Glenn Robinson III action unless one of those two starts hitting some more threes, which we certainly don't expect from Bruce Brown anytime soon. But then you got Svi, you got Langston, you got Kennard. I don't know that you can often play a combination of those guys together unless you're really trying to come from behind and hit a bunch of threes. you know, especially when you've got Reggie Jackson out there giving up dribble penetration too often. That's just a lot of non-defensive players. Unless V maybe surprises us a little bit with his defense, it's maybe billed as not so bad. Maybe the off-the-dribble stuff isn't so good, but it just seems like between Reggie, Kennard, and Langston, you got a bunch of non-defensive players there already. So a lot to think about if you're Dwayne Casey and the staff. But Bullock, I mean, he was just, in addition to being the best three-point shooter on the team, he was clearly the best wing on the team. Many nights, the second-best offensive player on the team, most nights, really, and as in the season at large, for sure. I would say that Bullock was a nice, kind of easy problem solver in that regard. And then perhaps maybe even more interesting is this than that is how the new, probably more permanent role of Khyree Thomas comes along. He's kind of the other guy in addition to Bullock that was on good nights passable on both offensive and defensive sides of the court. Barely passable, but when he's playing well, especially offensively, you can kind of have him out there from these small sample sizes that we've seen. And of course, we're intrigued to see Thon Maker. How much does he play? Does he strictly just eat into Zaza Pachulia's minutes as kind of a backup, a post player there? You know, where do the minutes come from with Thon? But it's another way that, that'll help and could be freed up for minutes for the Pistons is that they have they need these minutes freed up because the Pistons have six more back-to-backs left. That includes four back-to-back series in the month of March alone, and they're evenly spaced out over that month as well. They got some trips out west coming too. But up next, we're going to talk about some of the positives of the deals and also the non-trade, the much-talked-about non-trade that the Pistons did not make on Thursday. But did you get a smart speaker over the holidays? And if you did, tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Pistons. It'll play the newest episode right there for you for all the family to gather around and listen to. But also have your family download it on their phones too. Will help out the download counts. But go ahead, tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Pistons. Play podcast Locked On Pistons, and we'll all just be better people for it.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, we're going to go through the negative side about it, of the overall picture of these trades they've made the last couple days and why they could be perceived in that negative fashion. But just some more about the deadline here. I will say this, the trades, you know, most certainly, they obviously lowered the talent level for the Pistons this season, made them worse. No doubt about that. The playoff dream becomes a little bit more difficult, certainly realistic, and a lot of folks out there think that they're still, you know, better than a coin flip chance of getting in. I'm going to hold off on that for now. But I will say that basically when you look at the aggregate moves that they made, you're turning a 2-3 of Bullock into a 4 in Maker, and obviously I'm adding these deals together for the purposes of this thought experiment, but you're basically giving up a 3 in Stanley and replacing him with a 3 in Svi. So as far as roster construction, I would argue that this improves the Pistons' overall depth of guys that you would probably have in the rotation going forward. And what I mean is this. On the wings, you always kind of had an inactive guy when everyone's healthy or maybe an extra guy that got some DNPs. Now I feel like all the guys in the wings will play. You'll get guys some kind of minutes most nights out on the schedule, but you've kind of taken that extra guy that was either a DNP or inactive and kind of added that to the front court depth and Maker, so a guy that we expect to get minutes there at that position too. So I'm thinking about Zaza, I'm thinking about Blake, those two in particular, and adding Andre into that too. Maybe Maker could help ease the burden on some of these guys, not just night in and night out, but some rest days too, some days off. Obviously, we'd like to see Blake sit out some of those back ends of the back-to-backs, maybe fit in some extra time for Andre and Zaza as well. Been long seasons for those guys, some stretches, maybe like long stretches of games off too, especially if there's a lopsided score involved. But that could be valuable for this team, so that could be a good thing to look out for. But I'll say that on the asset accumulation side, in a two-year view of this roster, I think that they've improved this roster even for next season and certainly the year after that with these moves. If you concede that they weren't going to bring these guys back, which I don't think you should have with Bullock, unless that the number that you could have got him at was considerably less than what we would have guessed. And I think Stanley's a little bit of another story, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later today. But with Svi and Thon, and again, I'm not going to say that this is Larry Bird and Giannis Antetokounmpo out there, but these are dudes that could be in the rotation right now, possibly even starters or key bench guys down the road. And hopefully you maybe hit on one and you don't miss too badly on the other. I think that that's a win. And with the cost-controlled situation on your cap sheet, that's a win too. But with some other trade deadline stuff, let's take a look at these East powers. I mean, Milwaukee getting Nikola Mirotic in actually for Stanley Johnson at the end of the day. Also, Toronto with the biggest move of the deadline, getting Marc Gasol. Although I guess you could argue that Mirotic going to Milwaukee turns him into a little bit of a monster, and that might be the move of the deadline. But it just kind of further emphasizes my point here that, you know, before, I said this yesterday, but before that the Pistons, they were not likely to beat any of these teams in the first round, especially the 1 and 2 seeds, Milwaukee and Toronto, which are the two most likely opponents for the Pistons in the first round if they get to that 7th or 8th seed, assuming there's no big juggling at the top of the Eastern Conference. But now I would say that they're like 100% not beating any of these teams. You know, big injuries aside, of course. Before, you know, maybe I would have held out hope, especially mostly given the Reggie Bullock situation and Stanley Johnson as well. And obviously, you know, maybe foolishly thinking that they had a little bit of hope. But I thought that maybe the Pistons had like a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6% chance of beating either Milwaukee or Toronto in a 7-game series. But to me, given this trade deadline and both what those teams did to improve their roster and what the Pistons did to hurt their roster, I think that those chances are gone. I think there's now a 0% chance of the Pistons beating those teams in the playoffs. Maybe we'll say it's a 1% chance just to kind of keep the ratings up and keep the downloads up for the playoff episodes that we might be having the pleasure of being able to do later on this year. But now, you know, now given that I say that, you might say, well, then what's the reason in even making it? Why would we even make the playoffs? Maybe we should be changing the tone of the show to celebrate the losses and be frustrated with the wins for the rest of the season. But I'm not there. I still think there's value in making the playoffs. I think that Blake Griffin deserves the chance to win a playoff game here this season with the Pistons, because that literally becomes the goal of the season now, is to go for 5 games and win one of those games, don't get swept, win the first playoff game in a decade for the Pistons. And that's the upside that we're talking about, sadly. But get Blake Griffin some of that shine. Let the roster kind of celebrate one playoff win, have a little bit of progress with the Dwayne Casey era, give Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson and those guys something to feel good about that they haven't been able to accomplish with the Pistons so far in their 10 years with the team. I think that is more important, and you might disagree, and that's okay to disagree, more important than the, say, you know, 13% shot of getting in the top 4 or the 4% chance of landing Zion, that pick there, or even the upgrade in the player that you could get in the draft at 10 instead of 15, assuming those lottery odds don't work out in your favor. And again, we can agree to disagree if you are on the other side of that. But some other news from the deadline aftermath, Woj is reporting that the Pistons will be aggressively after Wayne Ellington in the buyout market. Another positive of the moves the Pistons made is they now have a little bit of wiggle room, over $2 million, according to Bobby Marks, in terms of going to shop on the buyout market there. So Wayne Ellington, the sharpshooter from Miami, a guy that is one of the more active offensive players in this era of the NBA, just a guy who's a tough guard. You got to be just running all over the place to cover him. Something that has value in a playoff series, something that has value, especially late in the season when tired legs all over the NBA. I think he's a guy that could help the Pistons in a big way. And obviously any addition to this group of wings at this point is help, especially when it's someone who has a marketable skill in the NBA. And obviously shooting is just that for Wayne Ellington. Basically like a homeless man's Rip Hamilton, but stretched out to three-point range, and that he's really tough to cover. He covers a lot of ground throughout the course of his time on the court. And the draw for him, and we know there's a lot of teams out there that are going to be in the market for Wayne Ellington. Obviously, some teams that could offer the chance of winning playoff series and making long, you know, playoff runs, or possibly even being quasi-contenders or real contenders, as it may. But I think the draw for him in Detroit is playing time. He's a guy who could get real minutes right away and be a guy who's a key contributor, leaned on for his shooting, obviously a very important aspect of today's NBA. And he could be a guy who fulfills that for the Pistons. And if he plays well, can't see any reason why he basically doesn't take Langston Galloway's minutes away from him as maybe a better version of that, and get some big-time playing time, maybe even start by the time things kind of get going here for the Detroit Pistons down the stretch. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company can be mentioned right here, right now on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite shows. Our demo is 98% males with more education and more earning power than your traditional media audiences. So have your company sponsor this podcast. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. And up next, we're going to talk about why I feel like maybe the overall picture of what the Pistons did could be a negative. I'm talking about culture, all that abstract stuff out there that's hard to put your finger on, and maybe we think about it and talk about it a little bit too much with writers and podcasts and media and all that good stuff. But that's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, and let's talk about the negatives. Let's go downer a little bit. And I'm not necessarily saying that what I'm about to throw at you is a certain no, and that the negative aspect of it is certainly the right answer. And I don't really have a fully formed thought process on some of this here, but I wanted to kind of throw some of my scattered pieces of thoughts at you guys. It is my belief that in the Stan Van Gundy era, and clearly even before that too, that there was an acquisition of acquiring some parts of this roster, some main principles of this franchise, that have strayed away from what I refer to as the soul of the Detroit Pistons, the history, what this franchise has been built on. And I know that I'm probably losing some of you as I say things like that, and that's fine. And this wouldn't really be as much of a problem, obviously, if they did a better job of choosing more talented free agents and drafting better, which were the two horrible aspects of the Stan Van Gundy front office regime, and clearly the most important aspects of an NBA front office too. But I believe that there is, and again, maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm childish, but I believe that there's an abstract vision of what it takes to be a Detroit Piston. We can't just be doing imitations of every other franchise. We can't just try to imitate the Milwaukee Bucks or the Golden State Warriors. And yes, talent is the most important thing in this league. And saying that and talking about the soul of the Detroit Pistons, I am recognizing and, you know, adding into this theory that this is a much different NBA than the Bad Boys era or the going to work era. You can't have the Jordan rules. You can't base the offense around mid-range games like Rip Hamilton did for so many years. But I do just wonder, and I alluded to this before, I wasn't totally, maybe I'm totally alone on this one. Maybe it's an unpopular opinion. Before the trade, obviously, I wasn't totally closing the door on extending the qualifying offer for Stanley Johnson. I appreciate the defense he played more nights than not. Every now and then, we really did get a glance of what a real Detroit Pistons player should be in Stanley Johnson, thinking most famously about the LeBron James confrontation in the playoffs a few years back, and Kawhi Leonard down the stretch this year winning that game in the Dwayne Casey, you know, a revenge game that he had in Toronto earlier this year. Obviously sad that Stanley couldn't put that together so far this season or in his career, but he's still 22 years old. Is it worth it to just let him go for nothing when you could pay him $5 million? I'm guessing he would have accepted the qualifying offer for another chance at one more season of proving his worth so that he could go get a free agent deal out there, whether that be from the Pistons or somebody else. But, you know, that being said, outside of Stanley, I do like the chip on the shoulder aspect of both guys being brought in, Sfi and Thon Maker. These guys have something to prove. They should be hungry, like Reggie Bullock was during his years here with the Pistons after being discarded a couple times. And I watched, these guys have watched a lot of basketball from the bench in the NBA so far in their short careers. Sfi has played in the G League quite a bit. That's got to be a frustrating thing for a guy who was drafted, not a guy who was, you know, a free agent that was trying to prove his way in. He came into Lakers. He thought he was going to play. He played well in summer league. He thought he was going to play alongside LeBron James in the playoffs, maybe even win a championship in year one or year two, certainly, as well. And I have, again, I have not watched enough of Sfi. I have not watched enough of Thon. There's probably not enough NBA tape available to make these kind of decisions on it. And they're young guys who can adjust and grow throughout their career too. So I don't have the opinion on if these guys have that type of toughness that I'm talking about that's needed to not only help create a winning atmosphere here with the Pistons, but help the culture, bring the fans back, become a team that the fans of the Detroit Pistons can be proud of. Because guess what? Guys my age, I'm 36, guys 10, 15 years older than me, guys 10, 15 years younger than me out there. We all kind of grew up on Detroit basketball, right? We all kind of grew up on a certain type of team. And I know that I overstate these things sometimes, but it's what we grew up on. It's what we know. It's what we want, right? And look, I know that the Pistons right now, look at the offensive rating, the defensive rating, they're middle of the pack defensively and towards the bottom of the league offensively. So the easy and mostly correct answer is that the most important thing with the Pistons is they need to boost the offense. You got to be able to keep up with the scoring around the league and the new NBA. But I think it's just as important, almost as important, in this town to pick up that defense too. Become not just a top five, not just a top 10, but become a top five defense. Become a dominant defensive team. Have that become your calling card. And just, you know, somehow figure out ways to become a middle of the road offense and as kind of the, you know, kind of the second part of what we're trying to accomplish here as a new front office, a new culture. I think that should be the goal of the front office with an eye on culture, an eye on winning the fan base back. I think that these two things are kind of, they go hand in hand. You make Little Caesars Arena a tough place to play, and you'll get some wins. You get some wins, you'll make Little Caesars Arena a tough place to play. And I think that the way to accomplish that is not just with that wins, but playing in the type of way that the Pistons have played before. We see it with the Red Wings, right? This is not a good team. This is one of the worst teams in the NHL, and their attendance isn't huge. Their ratings on Fox Sports Detroit isn't huge. But every conversation that I've had, and I am friends with many guys who are just like me, who are casual hockey fans at best, right? And we're basketball guys. I grew up around basketball guys. I do have some diehard hockey friends. But most of the people that I talk to about sports, we say, you know, the Wings aren't good, but I like what they're building. I like that there are guys out there that are giving a crap every night, and they're becoming that team that you can be proud of. Now, are they going to turn this into a Stanley Cup run at some point in 4 or 5 years? Who knows? Probably not. It's just there's a lot of variables out there. But they're becoming that team. They're building that culture. I don't see that quite yet with the Pistons. I like the draft picks. Didn't like some of the free agent signings. Kind of like some of the free agent signings. Some of them are working out on the court. Some of them are working out culture-wise. It's a little bit of a mixed bag with more hits than misses, I would say, so far. These trades, it makes a lot of sense to bring in a Thon Maker. It makes a lot of sense to bring in a Svi Mykhailiuk. And we've talked about those reasons. We've talked about it, and we'll continue to talk about it here on the show. And again, I know some of that doesn't matter, and most of this stuff is unspoken things. They're hard to quantify as well. But I think that experience, we'll just call ourselves experienced Piston fans like myself and diehards like you guys listening, we'll kind of know it when we see it with these new guys. We'll know it when we see it, if these guys are Detroit Pistons or not. And I hope we see it. I hope that becomes true to fruition. But let me know what you think. Send me your Google voice line voicemails. Give us a call at 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666-1546. Leave a voicemail message with your name and where you live as well. Let me know what you think about the trade deadline for the Pistons. We didn't talk about the Mike Conley deal at all, but it's one that I'm glad they didn't make. And I think I stand with a lot of you guys when we say that there's a big, big changes that have to be made with this team over the next few years. I don't think it's something you can just wave a wand at and hope things change. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons account for Twitter, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattSchoch. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that as well. But enjoy the weekend, everyone. Hopefully the Pistons can go on a little winning streak. It has been done before, says Lou from Major League. But have a great weekend, everyone, and thanks for listening.